We're going to continue with disaccharides today. Let me just ask, how many of you have started reading the carbohydrate chapter? Wow, that's a lot of improvement from the other section. Let me just remind you all that this is supposed to be one of those tests that's supposed to save you from the first test. So that alone should be enough to convince you to actually read and start studying this chapter, I would hope. What more can I say than that, right? Sucrose, then, is what we're going to start out with today, but let's just review a tiny little bit. We have these monosaccharides that we were dealing with, and now we're dealing with these disaccharides. What is a disaccharide? Well, we've got two individual smaller sugar units that are stuck together. The smallest sugar unit is one that only has one carbonyl group in it. So far we've seen two disaccharides. One of them was maltose. What's in that one? What are the sugar units in maltose? Two units of glucose. What about lactose, the other sugar that we did? Galactose and glucose. Do you happen to know what sucrose is? That's right. So we have fructose and glucose. But the fructose is actually going to be in its pyranose form. So before we do sucrose proper, I'd like to take an aldohexose and make a furanose out of it, because it is a little trickier than making a pyranose. So we're just doing this as an exercise, and then we're going to switch into sucrose proper. So let's work on drawing alpha-D-glucofuranose. So glucose we should be familiar enough with now, even if you haven't memorized all your sugars yet. From top to bottom, where do the OH groups go? Right, left, right, right, correct. And if I want to make the furanose, what does that mean? What's the term furanose mean? Five-membered ring. So it happens to coincide in this case with nomenclature, but I'm not numbering for nomenclature. I'm numbering for number of atoms in a ring. Because whenever we do make the cyclic form of a sugar, the carbonyl is automatically a member of that ring. So I'm going to start numbering from there. We go down the chain, position 2, 3, 4. And then if I move over from that point, then that particular oxygen, that's the fifth atom, that makes it the five-membered ring. So what I'm going to do is to cyclize through that oxygen. Remember that we then need to figure out which side is alpha on, which side is beta on. So in order to do that, we're going to have to twist the stereocenter around like we've done previously. Then we'll tip it and we'll dump it into a Hayward projection. So before I do any of that, notice that unlike all the examples we had done before, we're not twisting the last stereocenter, which means there is a complex group that's going to get rotated one way or the other when we do try to put the oxygen into the backbone. But if I did move it one way or the other, isn't that effectively turning it around 90 degrees? It is, and so if it is, isn't that an improper transformation of a Fischer projection? It is also, but we're going to ignore that because we're doing it on purpose just so we can see which side of the ring is this whole mess on. And so to make that whole process simpler, what I'm going to do is rewrite it. Because it's not involved at all in terms of reaction, in terms of mechanism. So I'll call it R for the moment, and this is just for ease of writing the structure over and over again. Now, not to confuse us, but there's another R I'm going to ascribe to this, possibly. Because what is the configuration of the bottom stereocenter, the one that I am folding into this R designation? The question was that stereocenter, is it R or S? Is it R? Let's check. So the most important substituent is the oxygen itself, so that's number one. Up top, we have a carbon that's connected to oxygen, carbon, and hydrogen. Down below, we have a carbon that's only attached to oxygen, hydrogen, and hydrogen. Carbon has greater priority than hydrogen, so that means substituent number two is the rest of the sugar up above. Substituent number three is the CH2OH group down below, and the hydrogen is the least important substituent. One, two, three, they appear to be counterclockwise. But remember that because hydrogen's on the side, it's really pointed towards us. So that means that it is an R configuration. We're going to leave that alone for the moment because I am just representing it by the variable name R. So if you're the type that only half listens because you really listen later on to the recording, bring your attention back just for a moment, because when you get home then you're going to see R, 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 and you're going to think, what does R mean? I've used it twice. Up here I'm saying that I want to simplify the structure, and that's why I'm representing it with R. And then here I want to know what the stereocenter's configuration is. And that is a R configuration. So returning to what I really want to do, which is to cyclize, let me again highlight that here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to take that oxygen and make a ring. I add a stereocenter, and for just the moment, I'm going to not try to assign that alpha beta position, because R is still in the bottom of the structure. The oxygen that's part of the ring is not written in the backbone. So without excellent visualization skills, we could potentially get where to put the alpha beta OH group in the wrong place. So I'll do as I've done before, which is to rotate the bottom stereocenter to precess those substituents around. That now gets the oxygen of the ring into the backbone. Makes the hydrogen go to the right, that R group go to the left. Because the R group is on the left and I want the alpha form, that means the top stereocenter, the OH group, is going to be on the right to make it trans. Now, does anyone have any questions about what I've done so far? Other than making this substitution of R, which wasn't necessary before because we were doing pyranoses, it's the only thing different so far. So let's put it into the ring form, the Haworth projection, which, since this is only a 5-membered ring now, is going to look a little different. Frequently, it's drawn symmetrically like this. Still, the oxygen's in the back because the anomeric position is still placed to the right-hand side. Remember that things on the right-hand side of the Fisher projection, when we tip it over, they're going to be on the bottom of the Hayworth projection. The things that are on the left of the Fisher projection, when we tip it over, they're on the top. So on the right-hand side, we have OH, OH, H, H. It's easy enough. OH, OH, H, H. Now, I've written everything else in except I don't want to put R now. I do want to write out the full structure of the molecule. Normally, I would just write one kink at this point and put an OH group on it. But there's an additional carbon here compared to the examples we've seen in the past, because we made the 5 and not the 6-membered ring form. But where I've put that asterisk there, ooh, I never did teach that this year, did I? Many times an asterisk is used to designate a stereo center. And so I've used it in that way just now to show, hey, we need a wedge or a dash here. Which one should it be? Now, I can see from the furrowed eyebrows that some of you are trying to do it the real way, which is, okay, which priority order is going to give me R or S? There's a way to cheat, though, but it does require that you have some reasonably good visualization skills. Because what if I look down upon the molecule that way? In other words, here is that branch, and I'm looking at it like this. Well, relative to my viewpoint, from the stereo center, which direction does the carbon-carbon bond, both of them, appear to be pointing? Away from me, correct? Because if I'm looking, like, for the moment, realize I'm looking upside down, but I'm looking down this way, so whether my eyebrows are below or above, in this case it doesn't matter, the two carbon-carbon groups are away from me. Well, that would mean that the dash and the wedge are pointed towards me. Isn't that the way that we would normally visualize a Fisher projection? Well, in the Fisher projection, we already have the configuration of that stereo center. If I'm looking at it, and the carbon-carbon bonds are pointed away from me, and the carbonyl's up top, then OH group's on my right, hydrogen's on the left. Now let's see, OH here, hydrogen here. Let's see if I can get myself in the same position as that molecule would be in. So I'm supposed to be looking down this way, like this. OH group is on my right still, hydrogen's on the left. From your position, though, which way is the OH group? I've got to keep people awake somehow. You know. You should have seen what I was doing for the other lecture. I was trying to do this kind of thing. It's like, no, that's backwards. It's like that. It's a wedge, though. If you try to visualize it, because that's on the right and because I'm looking down this way, it's to you, so it's a wedge. If I could just make cars fly across the room, this is exactly what they do in the Zen Jersey. Right, so there it's okay, but here it's easy. You had a question? That's the point, though, because we can't drop until we know which way it should be configured. So another way to do it is just draw something. Put the wedge in, and then figure out if it's R or S. You know it's supposed to be R, so if you get S, you know it did backwards. There is that way of doing it. How did I get the wedge, all the silly fists that I was doing a minute ago? Which I'll do it one more time. I've kind of written over it here. Didn't leave myself room, so I'll move that up. It's unusual because I'm giving you a visualization point where my eyebrow is not
oriented with the paper. It's opposite. So that eyebrow means that my head is looking down this way. Now imagine that these are the two carbon-carbon bonds. So I'm looking, it's like those tricks people always do. Can you touch your nose to your elbow? So I'm looking down this way. Here's one carbon-carbon bond away from me. Here's the other one. Carbonyl's up here because there's the carbonyl. So it's above my viewpoint. So I'm looking down. There's the carbonyl. On the Fischer projection, the OH group is on the right. Well, on the right, from where you're sitting, is pointed towards you. That's why it's a wedge. Now, if you want to verify if that's correct, oxygen priority number one. The rest of the sugar priority number two. CH2OH priority number three. Implicit hydrogen in the back priority number four. Those three substituents are in clockwise order, so it's R, so I did do it correctly. But it does not surprise me if it's confusing to you a bit, which is why I saved doing furanosis until now, until we had some examples of doing this sugar visualization, because it's automatically tougher because we do have an quote-unquote extra stereocenter. So what may be happening, the question, what you just said was somehow my order is getting reversed. Like I get the things at the bottom, but I get them backwards. This two-dimensional structure, you have to always remember that the Fischer projection is supposed to be rolling away from you. So what can happen, though, is you might look at this big thing and think, oh, this is the front, and then this is the back. Which means you're automatically going to invert what you're seeing. I think that what might be going on. So just remember that the Fischer projection, the middle of the Fischer projection should be pointed at you. So in this case, this OH group is, if I'm looking this way, OH group here, OH group here, I flip around, OH group there, OH group there. Can I repeat that? What's happening is, to some people, this oxygen looks like it's actually in the front of the molecule. You have to remember that this oxygen, because it's vertical, is pointed away from you. But what can happen is that sometimes when you're learning to visualize, you'll accidentally perceive this to be the back of the ring. And so when you try to translate it to the structure, you're going to get your groups backwards. Because if you swap the front and the back, you're making the mirror image, which is exactly what you're getting, then, the things in reverse position. Yeah?
If you were to draw this on the exam, if you were to draw the group, kind of like a dotted line behind it?
Perfectly fine. Whatever helps. Since we're paused here, any more questions at all about this? Because yes, you may have to draw an aldohexose in its furanose form. Because maybe just once, I'll make you have to figure out how you draw that silly stereocenter that's not in the ring. Questions? Okay. So, now, let's get to sucrose proper. Sucrose is 2O. Alpha D glucopyranosyl. Beta D fructofuranoside. Yeah.
Same thing as we did right here. That stereocenter is this one right here.
So carbon that has oxygen and another carbon attached is more important than a carbon that only has oxygens and hydrogens attached. So if you compare the priorities, we have OCH attached here, we have OHH on the bottom. Hydrogen's less important than carbon, so we take the top substituent instead.
Maybe you haven't seen this use of what's called the first point of difference rule. Okay, now let's continue on with sucrose. Alpha-D-glucopyranose. We've drawn that a bunch of times before. So let's see if we can do that, not going through the linear structure first. Now this sugar follows the normal pattern that I told you about for aldohexoses, which is that these sugars always have that back stick, the CH2OH group, pointing up. Realize that the previous example, it just happened to work out the same way, where that back group was also pointed up. But that's only because the stereocenter where that carbon was happened to have the OH group on the right, just as we would for the last stereocenter of any D sugar. But there are four aldohexoses, there are four D aldohexoses where this stereocenter is on the left. Name one of them. Name an aldohexose where
Talos.
Where it's a D sugar, but stereocenter 3 is on the left. Name another one. Galactose, yes. So it's the last four of them. Gulose, idose, galactose, talose. All four of those have that stereocenter. Which means when we get to this point of twisting around, you don't automatically twist to the right like you would for a D sugar, because it doesn't matter what the last stereocenter's configuration is, it matters where does the ring connect. The point of saying all that is that quick and easy rule about which way does the back group point and which way do alpha and beta point only works the way I described it for aldohexopyranoses. But since I now want to draw an aldohexopyranose, we can follow those quick rules, which is alphas will be pointed down. The back CH2 group will be pointed up. Glucose is right, left, right, right. So those first three stereocenters are right, left, right. So there's alpha D glucopyra. Notes. Now we need to draw the beta D fructofuranose. And we'll worry about why is it furanose side in just a moment. So fructose. Before we draw the structure of fructose, let me remind us of something we covered a couple lectures back. That fructose and glucose are actually interconvertible, aren't they? Why? Because we could take glucose, make a double enol out of it. We could do a tautomerization. And when we come back out of that tautomerization, we can move the position of where the carbonyl had been. And in fact, let me ask you this question, because it's kind of related, sort of. If I take glucose, this form of it, and put it into water, what's going to happen to the optical rotation? If I take this alpha-D-glucopyranose, measure its optical rotation in solution, and then measure it an hour later, what are you going to notice? It's changed. Why? protonate, open, attacking, protonate, protonate, open, attacking, protonate. We have the ring able to open and close, open and close, open and close, because as yet another reminder, what kind of functional group do we have here? Ah, but not a full acetal, is it? It's a hemiacetal. Because it's a hemiacetal, it's in equilibrium with its open linear form. Now, that's an issue that we'll come back to just momentarily, or based on how much time we're going to have left, something we'll take up much more on Tuesday. Back to what I was asking a minute ago, or talk about a minute ago. This is one issue that this ring could open. Once it opens, if you're in the right condition, glucose can convert to mannose, or it could also convert to fructose. The reason I'm going this whole story is because glucose, mannose, fructose, and arabinose all share the same configuration for their bottom three stereocenters. So if you can't remember fructose, remember glucose, and remember what the bottom of glucose looks like. So fructose is this. Now, if I want to make fructopyranose, I want the five-membered ring. So, again, for those of you who write and then listen later, the numbers I'm about to write are not nomenclature numbers. They are numbers to count atoms, period. And so now, because I have a ketose, a ketohexose, position 5 is the OH group on the last stereocenter. So this is going to be an easier molecule to visualize than the one up above was. So let's go ahead and make the ring. When I make the ring, remember that I have a new stereocenter at where the carbonyl used to be. I end up with the same problem as always, which is that the oxygen is not in the backbone. It's sticking off to the side. So if I want to move it into the backbone, because I am now dealing with a sugar where I'm using its last stereocenter, and because it's a D sugar, it is automatically twisted clockwise to visualize correctly. Now that puts the part of the molecule sticking off the ring on the left-hand side. I want the beta form. So beta means whatever I draw is going to be cis. Yes.
Where did the top
I hadn't written it yet, because the OH group goes one side or the other. The CH2OH group is what's left over. It goes wherever the OH group doesn't. Since in this form I can't reliably tell where the OH group goes, that's why I also didn't write where that CH2OH group. But now that I know where the OH group is, I automatically know where the CH2OH group is. Now the only thing left is to tip this into a Hayworth form, a cyclic form. So now I've made cyclic beta D fructofuranose. Are there any questions how I got here? It's the same type of visualization we've been doing. It's just slightly different because now we're doing furanoses and we did it with a ketose. Because we have a ketose, which means the carbon that becomes part of the ring is not the top, that's why we end up with two of these tails, if you want to think of them that way. Two of the CH2OH groups. Again, because we're using a ketose instead. Now there's one thing left to do, which is to connect the two rings. So notice that this is 2O in terms of nomenclature numbers. You still number from the top of the compound because that's where the carbonyl was. But the carbonyl, because it's a ketose, is not carbon 1, as it was in all our previous examples. So now, if we want to substitute at the 2 position through that anomer, that's why it's 2O. Notice what that's going to mean, though. We're going to take the anomer of one sugar and tie it to the anomer of another. As we'll see on Tuesday, that's going to have some consequences on the reactivity of the sugar. As far as finishing writing this molecule down, yes, the normal pattern is to try to keep the anomer position on the right, but if I do that for both of these molecules, I'm going to have them stacked on top of each other with a big long bond with the oxygen connecting the two. For some people, that might be not a bad way to visualize it. I prefer to write the molecule side to side, but what that's going to mean is I'm going to need to spin this around. But now watch very carefully. If the oxygen is in the back, then if I spin this 180 degrees around, that means that the oxygen's now in front. The way this is currently drawn, we have, so that means when I turn 180 degrees and don't change anything else, I don't reflect or anything, in the back of the ring, I'm going to end up with an OH group up on the left and an OH group down on the right. Let's see what this looks like. So here's the glucose part. And now I'm going to do the fructose part. Remember, it's as if I took that ring and just twisted 180 degrees. Now, I just thought of a new visualization trick. Maybe try it out Tuesday. Then in the back, got my 2H groups, and on the side, of my CH2OH group. Yes? Why did we? Okay, so imagine this. Imagine this is a post, and in the post, my arm is going to rotate around. So right now I keep the post here, and I've got the sugar pointed out this way. It's a CH2OH group pointed here. I can turn the sugar around this way. No problem. Take it exactly the way it's drawn, but that means it's going to be drawn right here. So you need even more room vertically to be able to write the structure and not have it overlap with itself. So you could draw it that way, and that's the way I think your textbook draws it. But to make it where there's a little more visualization, so I don't have to worry about crowding everything in one space, I chose to write the ring the other way around.
Is it okay?
I don't know. Is it okay? I just said that it was my choice to do that. So you could not do it too, but then you need more room this way to draw. Now, if you have questions about that last bit where I swung the ring around, then this is where you need your model sets. Because just in the last class, I had someone that asked, why did you do it? And I explained it. And then he asked again, why did you do it? And I said, look at a model set. He asked, why did you do it? And I said, look at a model set. Because we're trying to take three-dimensional objects on a two-dimensional paper and in our heads spin them in three dimensions, but still write them in two. It's not trivial. It's easy with practice. Some people are just lucky and they visualize. But if you're having difficulty, then you need to move to the third dimension. You need a model. So any questions? Now let me just double check where we did get. Oh yes. So two things. Notice that from both sugars' perspective, this is now an acetal. Acetals do not as easily open up into linear form because acetals, although they can be hydrolyzed, are less prone to opening than a hemiacetal is. So this glucopyranose, that's why I asked earlier, what would happen if you threw it in the water? What would happen to its optical rotation? It changes because it freely opens and closes. But since this sucrose is an acetal, not a hemiacetal, it does not easily open and close by itself. It does actively take hydrolysis to change the ring. So there are these terms we're going to talk about Tuesday, and you might have heard in your bio classes some older terminology about reducing sugars. Reducing sugars would mean sugars that can be oxidized. Well, what it's going to revolve around is whether or not we can access the carbonyl of a sugar. If you have it tied up like this in an acetal, no, it won't open up, and no, it can't perform any other subsequent reaction. And there's one specific test, or there's a few tests, but one we'll talk about in particular, called the Tollens test, or the silver mirror test, if any of you have ever seen or heard of that before. If not, then that's one of the directions I suggest that you go in with your reading over the weekend. The other is the last thing I want to introduce for today. Because if I take this compound, which is an acetal, and if I reacted it with a solution of silver oxide, and methyl iodide, what's going to happen? Well, you've seen silver oxide, but used for a different purpose previously. Recently, where? Because again, for test survival strategies, remember that this test won't be just carbohydrates. There are still technically amines that we've had since the last test. I didn't get to every amine type of question. In particular, I hadn't quizzed you yet on the Hoffman elimination. That's the last time you saw silver oxide, because what was done there, in the Hoffman elimination, you have a tetraalkyl ammonium salt, usually a tetraalkyl ammonium halide. The silver causes the halogen to precipitate, which leaves a hydroxide left as the counter ion for the salt. Silver is still being used to trap a halide in this case. So let me throw this back again. What would be the result of taking sucrose and reacting with this? Will anything happen to the acetal? What did you say? That's actually the right answer. But answer my other question first. Will anything happen to the acetal? Because if this reacts the way it does with the Hoffman elimination, we're going to have hydroxide that's somehow produced. Will hydroxide do anything to the acetal ring? Protonate, but can we have protons in hydroxide? I'll just remind us of this. Nothing I'm going to ask about this quarter. But I'll just remind us about this DHP protecting group, which also ends up making an acetal. What would happen to that DHP or THP protected alcohol if we used a Grignard reagent? Nothing, right? Which is the reason we used it as a protecting group. Aren't Grignard reagents pretty darn basic? That's the point of me bringing up this example. Base won't hurt that acetal. Silver oxide won't do anything to the acetal. But Kathleen is correct that this is going to alkylate all those OH groups. Because if somehow indirectly hydroxide is produced, then you could make an alkoxide of an alcohol. Alkoxide with this wonderful methylating agent. It's one of the best SN2 substrates. It's why it's used on strawberries, and that's why people are worried that it's used on strawberries, because it's that active. That, you know, methyl bromide, the whole controversy in California where they were changing what they put on straw. Well, that's the chemical it's related to. Methyl iodide, methyl bromide. Very, very reactive alkylating agents. So you throw silver oxide at a sugar. Notice we won't throw hydroxide, because yet as another aside here, if we had hydroxide and methyl iodide, all we're going to get is methanol. They'll react with each other. So we use the silver oxide as a sneaky way of deprotonating the sugar. Every OH group gets alkylated, and so we end up with exhaustive methylation. And here's what our product would look like. Notice it's every available OH group that gets alkylated. The oxygens in the ring, since the ring is not affected by basic conditions, they don't react. Now, why would we want to do such a thing? Well, this is what we'll talk about Tuesday because we're out of time. Let's say we had a sugar we didn't know the identity of. And let's say we did exactly this reaction. When we do hydrolyze this, when we do force this to turn back into linear form, we're going to have the ring open, which means now one of the carbons has an available OH group. If you identify which carbon that was, you identify the size of the ring that was in that sugar, because only the oxygen in the ring doesn't get a methyl group. That's the other thing after reducing sugars that we'll tackle on Tuesday. Plus, we got one more disaccharide, the solubiose. Plus, we should talk briefly about polysaccharides. So are there any questions? Because we are out of time.